is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, March 7th, 2024, and today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney, working in Fort Myers. Today, we've got a Braves and Red Sox exhibition. I don't know what time you're listening to this podcast, but if it's before 1 o'clock, look us up. It looks like we're going to have Joey Votto join us during the course of the during the broadcast. He's not only going to talk about his situation, but also about some observations he have about players on both of these teams. Sean and Adrian are working from California. And guys, we just got done taping a fascinating interview with Albert Pujols about the possibility of him becoming a manager. What was your takeaway? Big picture, Sean, from that.
Albert is probably one of the coolest people I've ever met, to be honest. And the fact that he was just so like, I'm going to be a player's manager. I'm going to, you know, fight for my guys. I mean, you know, I may not throw my hat and clipboard on the ground, but, you know, I'm going to make sure that they get whatever they deserve and make sure that they trust the process. When he was really talking about that part, that's what really stuck out to me. So I think he's going to do great.
Adrian, what do you think? You want to chime in?
Of course. I'm a longtime Angels fan. And it was kind of interesting to hear that some of the players, when he was talking about asking, like trying to get them to ask him questions, that they didn't really do so in a group setting, but more so whenever they came to talk to him individually, kind of is more relatable as a fan. So really cool takeaway, behind the scenes moment.
And yeah, quick votes on this. Do you think he's going to manage in the big leagues? Because I walked away from this interview like, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Adrian?
Yeah, just like what Hembo said, he could do whatever he wants.
Yeah, and Hembo, we're going to talk to after we talk to Albert. We're also going to be doing today a Giants preview, and Susan Slusser of the San Francisco Chronicle will join us as well. All right, some news and notes as we get going. Jeff Passan reported on Tuesday that Lucas Giolito might miss the entire season because he has damage in his right elbow. He has a partially torn ulnar collateral ligament and a flexor strain. He, of course, signed with the Red Sox during the offseason with a two-year contract. Sonny Gray, signed to be the Cardinals' ace in the offseason, could miss opening day because he has a hamstring issue. Gray said on Tuesday, if it's in the cards for me to still do that, then obviously I'm going to do everything in my power to make that happen. The Braves got what they're saying is good news about Ronald Acuna Jr. He had an examination of his sore right knee, his surgically repaired knee, and no serious issues were found. He left the Braves spring training site in Florida to be examined in Los Angeles on Monday night. And when he went to meet with reporters, I read this on Tuesday, he walked out with a cane and then he threw it away. He was like, just kidding. So he was, seemed to be taking the news with a lot of happiness that there's not a major issue in that knee. Pirates pick Paul Skenes from last year, the number one overall pick, is going to start the year in the minor leagues. That's not a surprise. According to our friend Alex Speer, the Red Sox of the Boston Globe, the Red Sox are in advanced talks with Brian Bayo and a long-term contract. Another report has a proposed deal for something in the range of about $50 million over 5 years. Eddie Rosario signed a one-year, $2 million deal with the Nationals that also includes some incentives. And Mike Zunino, the longtime catcher with the Mariners, Rays, and Guardians, announced his retirement. So has Josh Donaldson, the American League MVP a while with Toronto in 2015. Sean, what else you got?
I want to tell everybody to please go check out the College Game Day podcast. Reese Davis and Pete Thamel talked with Michigan State Spartans' newest football coach, Jonathan Smith, and they actually asked him some questions about NIL deals. And since Jonathan Smith is originally from Los Angeles, they asked him about some of these NIL deals and trying to build a roster just like the LA Dodgers did with signing Ohtani and Yamamoto.
Albert Pujols, one of the very few players in baseball history to get 700 homers and to get 3,000 hits. And this week he's in the Angels camp. Albert, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Buster. Good to see you. How's everything with you?
Doing great. Look, when I saw the news last week that you're going to be managing in the Dominican, I was like, I got to get him on the podcast. I want to talk to you about that. Before we get to that, tell me what you're doing in Angels camp.
Well, right now, you know, I had that personal service. So I'm kind of like, last year was my first time starting that service. And I had a great time just coming here at Angels camp. you know, today I was with the minor league for the last couple of days, and it's been amazing. I mean, just to help them out as much as I can, not just with the skill of the game, but mentally or whatever I can help them out, you know, to hopefully not make the same mistake that I did. And just being here with Vladimir Guerrero, which to me, one of the best human beings that I've ever been around. It's just an honor, you know, to be part of this camp. And there's a lot of talent that I see in Angels camp. So it was just really good to be here and be part of it.
So I remember when I covered the Yankees, there were pitchers who were, I knew relievers on other teams who were afraid to approach him because he was Mariano Rivera, you know, the greatest closer of all time. How are players about coming up to you and asking you questions?
Yeah, that's the challenge. You know, those are the things that I run into. I feel like some of the guys should take advantage. But for me, that's something that I tell them. I'm like, guys, you know, I know that I can intimidate some of you guys because their career or who I am or how serious I took my job. But take advantage. I'm here for you. I'm not here for myself. My time already passed. I'm here to try to help you guys out. I wish I would have had an opportunity to have an Albert Pujols or a Vladimir Guerrero come to me when I was young or when I was your age and try to talk to me about the game or even having an opportunity to asking any question or whatever I want. And that's something that I really leave it up and put it up on the table out there so that way they feel comfortable. They still feel like that. Even today, you know, I was there for 5 hours and we did a little bit of like Q&A, and there were guys that were really intimidated. Like there were not that many questions, but then after I'm done speaking, guys want to take a picture and asking the question by themselves, which it's okay. But I feel like sometimes guys are afraid to ask the question because they feel sometimes, well, that question is stupid. I tell them there's never a stupid question. If you ask a question, it's because you don't know and you want to get better. So it's okay to ask questions. I was one of those guys. You know, I remember being a rookie. I was in their seat. I was in their shoes, asking questions to Mark, Placido Polanco, Gene Edmonds, Edgar Renteria, Mike Mantini, and the list go on and on and on. And guys that helped me out. So I really try to make it as easy as I can, as comfortable as I can, so they can ask those questions. But sometimes I agree with you. They get intimidated.
And they're shy. You know, Dave McKay, someone who you know well, told me a story about how, you know, working with the Diamondbacks a couple of years ago in spring training, he had some health issues and he was watching games at home at night. And he invited all the minor leaguers, come to my house. I'm ready to go. One guy came through the door, one player, Corbin Carroll.
Yes.
Which tells you a lot about his personality. All right. That's actually a perfect segue into the whole topic of managing. Tell me when that fire and that idea began to develop within you.
Well, I think probably about 5 or 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, almost towards the end of my career, that was something that for me, you know, having one of the best managers that ever put a uniform, you know, a Cardinal uniform, but not only a Cardinal uniform, every uniform that he had put on, like Tony La Russa, it allowed me to learn so much, allowed me to walk into his office asking questions. I mean, I have a dinner probably tomorrow with him, tomorrow night, and just to pick his brain. Somebody that was easygoing, you know, for me as a player, and somebody that wasn't just a manager for me, it was almost like a father figure for me. Somebody that I was comfortable to call him anytime I want, somebody that I was comfortable to walk into his office as a rookie, as a veteran guy, and he was always polite enough to give me the right answer and to make me understand. So I feel like after, you know, a great career like I have, thanks to God, I was thinking about, man, I really want to do this. I really want to be a manager if this opportunity comes right. And you hear me in the past. It wasn't just 2 weeks ago when the news broke out. I've been saying it since I got retired. I've been saying it 2 years before I retired. If the opportunity is right, I would love to do it. Who doesn't want to be a manager, you know? So I think that is always being in me. I think being a baseball player, this is what I know. This is what I know best. And I think, you know, being a manager now for Leones del Escogido is a great opportunity to start a team that I grew up watching when I was a little boy. That was my team. That's still my team. I had an opportunity to play in 2001 with the team. So now having that opportunity to start with a great organization like Escogido is unbelievable. So you have to start somewhere. And what's better way to start in your country? I know the challenge because I know my country. As soon as you lose two or three games, it's a short season. They want you out. So I accept it. You know, 23 years into this game as a professional, it's always a challenge. It's never easy. So nothing comes easy. So for me, I have a great coaching staff that I put in together to help me out to hopefully have the success that I have as a baseball player, now as a manager, you know, with this new chapter in my life.
Albert, you know everybody. You know, whenever we had one of your games on television, before games, seeing you greet players on the other team and they'd come and seek you out, you know everybody. How would you describe how you think you would be regarded as a manager? In other words, you've heard of players' managers, you've heard of, you know, the field general, the old-fashioned. How would you be as a manager, do you think?
Yeah, I think for me, I would be along the way like Tony. Being a player manager, guys that protect their player, guys that I not only want to be your manager, but I want to be your mentor. I want to be somebody that can help you out to get to the next level if that's the player's goal. I want to be a manager, you know, that not just when you going good, everything is great for you and you want to be my best friend. No. I was a player, remember. So I know how to approach guys when things aren't going well and when things are going good. And I want to create a relationship. You know, I want to bring a culture into Escogido that they haven't even seen in there, you know, in the 103 years of the history of Escogido. So for me, it's that, building a relationship, building a great communication with the players, communicating with them when they don't play, when they don't going to play, when they're going to play. What I'm expecting for my player is to show early, play hard, respect myself, but also the organization and my coaching staff. And, you know, I'm not a guy that I'm going to police everybody around. No. I don't going to babysit you guys. But I want them to leave their ego outside the door. And when they put that uniform, I want them to be proud. I want them to show up into the stadium and their presence get to know him right away, because I was that player that whenever I took the field, I want that present to be known that I'm here. I learned it from Tony. I learned it from so many great guys. And that's how you build a championship ball club. And that's what I'm expecting with my guys. I had an opportunity yesterday to spoke with a couple of those guys. I'm doing my homework, kind of getting to know some of the players and just kind of picking them brain of how we can make them better to accomplish what they couldn't finish this year. And that's winning a title and then win early.
So you're so precise in your preparation, your whole career, and your attention to detail, which makes me think just off the top of my head, I can imagine that analytics is something that would be really attractive to you. It's information. What's your view? As you know, that's been a change in baseball, especially over the last decade.
Yeah, that's a great question, you know, because remember, I was one of the lucky ones that play in the old era and then the new era.
Yeah.
So I think at the end of the day, analytics is great. It's great for the game. I think, you know, you have to use the information right now in this game. I think this is something that can help you win ball games. I think to lean on 100% in analytics, I think is it'd be difficult. I think you need to follow your guts. I think you need to follow the experience. You need to follow your coaches and use the experience that you play. I'm going to do things probably that is going to go against the analytics. But at the end of the day, if we came up with a win, we came up with a win. I'm going to use some things that the analytics is going to give me, the information that's going to help me win games. And it's about what are we going to do today with the information that I get from the front office, from Luis Rojas and his crew, And then for the information on my coaches, what are we going to do today to put it together to win again? Because this is not about analytics. This is not about Albert Pujols. This is not about the coaching staff. This is about the Escogido. And what can we do every single day to come up with a plan to win again? Whether it's preparing ourselves to bring that nasty rider to get a ground ball double play because he's the guy that's going to give me a chance to get the double play, to take my starter out because I know that the third time around, he's not going to be as good as it was the first two time around. I mean, all those things you have to put in consideration. And I think at the end of the day, it's about that. It's about putting those things together. I'm not against analytics. I think it's helping the game, but I think you have to mix it with the experience and the coaching staff, you know, because we play the game and we have a feel for the games that the analytics won't show you in the paper, you know? And I don't want to be a manager that to build guys to be a robot and follow this thing. If you don't take two steps, I enjoy player when they can figure out that hitter and say, you know what? Because he swing, I think I need to move two steps to the left or I need to move two steps to the right. I want that then to figure that out. I don't want my coaches to be whistle and say, hey, you need to move, you know. No, I want the player to be in that position before the coaches, you know, even tell them because I was that player, you know. So I think there's a lot of things, a lot of preparation. I'm really excited for this opportunity and I'm really excited, you know, for the coaching staff that I have. I think it's going to be great. And, you know, I just hope that I have a great, you know, a start of this career just like I was as a player.
So I got two more for you that I know you'll be asked when you interview for a major league manager job someday. Okay. One, I Charlie Manuel, someone, you know, told me this great story about playing for Ted Williams. And Charlie was a young hitter and Ted was standing outside the cage and Charlie struggling and a teammate struggling. And Ted finally got frustrated. 50 years old, he had a big belly at that time. He gets in the cage, he starts ripping line drives. And Charlie telling me this, he goes, if I didn't feel bad about myself before that, oh my God. And then I also covered Tony Gwynn in my first job covering the big leagues. He was someone who related really well with players to the point that he became a very successful college coach. You're an all-time great player. Tell me about how you bridge that with young players in terms of helping them.
I love that. That's a great question, Buster, you know, because that's a lot of things and expectation, you know, and people are asking me, are you going to be as hard with player to expect? I'm like, no, I think the thing is you need to have a feel for it. You need to have a feel for the players. When is the right time to put their arm around and pull it to the side? When is the right time to push that player? I go back. When that player feel comfortable, and that's something that I share today as I was speaking, when you feel as a player that the manager has your back, that player is going to do for you everything. He's going to play hurt. He's going to show up early. He's going to give everything because he, not just only the respect that you have shown him, but he wanted to do it for you as a manager. And that's how it was with Tony, with Sosha, and all the managers that I played for because there's respect that I have for me. I think I have a great coaching staff that I'm going to trust as a hitter. That I was with the success that I have, I think I'm going to control myself. I'm training myself on it because there's going to be situation. I'm going to be showing players up and say, oh, my God, I'm throwing arms in the air or throwing hat. Like, because I was a player, man, and I know how difficult that is. And the last thing that you want is that player being frustrated because he strike out with bases loading. The last thing that he wants to hear is the manager showing frustrated because you just strike out. You know, and I think those are things that you need to be careful as a manager because you have to show that respect for a player. And especially myself, that I was a player and I know how frustrated I can be. So that's when you really use that strategic and say, you know what? I need to pull him to the side tomorrow. I need to talk to him. I need to ask, hey, do you need a day off? How can we help? And just use the things that not just managers in the past have helped me, but things that I teach myself and taught myself to to have the success that I have. So to get in the batting cage and to take swing like Ted Williams, I don't think that's going to happen.
But, well, Charlie tells a great story. When he was doing that, he said the wind's gusting in from right field and Ted's hitting the ball 30 feet into the stands and Charlie can't get the ball anywhere. And he just is like, oh my God, I'm so bad.
Yeah. But it's great. And these are the things that I'm sure this won't be the first talk that you and I will have. And the last one, I think, you know, as the season goes, that things get unfold, I think it's going to be more interesting because it's something new for me and something that I'm so passionate right now. I'm so excited and I'm really looking forward for this great opportunity.
Last one, maybe the most important thing a manager does is handling a pitching staff. The two best that I've seen at it are Bruce Bochy, who is a former catcher. So there's that built-in knowledge, all that experience he had at that position. And the other one is the person you played for. Tony was awesome. The use of the modern-day bullpen started with Tony, who was a middle infielder. Tell me about how you feel like your development will be managing a pitching staff.
That's great. That's another great question, you know, because I have a great pitching coach right now on Jairo Cueva, who had that's the guy that we're trying to target. We haven't figured out yet, but it's almost like 95%. That's the guy that we are targeting. That's the guy that knows the league. That's a guy that was really successful when he was the pitching coach for the Liceys. So that's a guy that I trust. A guy that I know for almost 7 years now. He used to be with the Angels. I think at the end of the day, we're going to come with a game plan every single day. How we're going to use those guys. Because remember, it's not 162 game. It's a 50-game season. It's a short season. You have a bad weekend or you have a bad week, and your season might be over. It's not like, you know, tomorrow, we get it tomorrow. You have to get it today. And for us, and something that I'm going to share with the guys is that we need to play every single game like it's a playoff, guys. Like it's a playoff game, you know. And I'm gonna manage in the game like we are, you know, two innings ahead. I don't want things to surprise me. I feel that that's how Tony was. Nothing got Tony by surprise. He always had an answer. He always had to figure it out. He always had a plan. But everything goes by the preparation, how you prepare yourself for the game, how you handle your pitching staff, how you handle a guy that, okay, we have a lefty coming on, but I'm not going to bring a lefty because this guy still hit lefty pretty well. Let me bring a guy that throws this nasty cutter, a nasty sinker that's going to be more effective for that left-hander. Or it's the same thing, the opposite, is the righty. You know, let me bring the guy that can throw a nasty sinker and needs that ground ball double play. And that's when you open yourself and rely to your coach. You rely to your pitching coach and the routine and the game plan that we put together, and you go out there and trust it. Everything goes by preparation. You prepare yourself, you need to trust the process. Myself, that's how I was as a player, and I'm going to managing this game and this opportunity that I have like I was a player. Trust in the process. Trust in my preparation. Hey, sometimes it's not going to work, but hopefully most time it's going to work. And that's the idea, you know, because as you know, you've been covering this game for such a long time. And things sometimes don't go as well as you plan it. Well, you have to have a B plan, a C plan, and sometimes a D plan, because that D plan is the one that's going to help you to win the game at the end of the day. So bullpen is huge. In the Dominican Republic, the ballpark are huge. You don't see a lot of power hitter. You win the game with manufacturing runs, you know, with the hit and run, get him over. And those are the things that I'm going to come in and tell my players. And playing defense. Defense is huge in the Dominican Republic. And bullpen, that's how you win games. So I'm trusting my pitching coaches that they're going to come with a game plan, my coaching staff, myself, that we're going to put a game plan day in and day out to win a game at the end of the day.
All right, two highest pressure jobs in sports, coaching football in the Southeastern Conference and managing winter ball. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, it is. It is, Buster. And that's the thing, guys. Like, man, you are crazy what you're putting your hands on. I'm like, why not, man? I love it. Why not? It was always a challenge for me every single day for 23 years that I played. And I love that challenge. So I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully, you know, my goal is to try to win a championship.
All right, Albert. Thanks so much for your time. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you, buddy. Take care, bro. Good to see you.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Paul Imbecchiati is the highest paid researcher in baseball. I think I've told that story like five times, Hembo, how you have the $701 million contract all deferred for 125 years. You must be proud.
Exceedingly proud. You know, like wealth doesn't buy happiness. But as my ancestors can attest, Buster, it certainly does not hurt. And it won't hurt them in the future, that's for sure.
All right. You popped on Zoom as I was finishing that interview with Albert Pujols. You got to hear the last 6 or 7 minutes. I really haven't had a chance to digest it and think about what he said. What was your takeaway after hearing him?
Albert Pujols can do whatever he wants in the game of baseball for as long as he lives. If he wants to manage a big league club as early as the 2025 season, he'll do it. If he wants to someday be a part of the commissioner's office and shape the way that Major League Baseball is played, he'll do it. If he wants to pour his energy, effort, and enthusiasm into youth baseball in America and abroad, he'll do it. And anything he touches will likely turn to gold, because Albert Pujols' career was one of those that 50 years from now, we'll talk about the way that we talk about Mickey Mantle and Stan Musial and Cal Ripken Jr. and all the wonderful players of yesteryear who played the game the right way for such a long period of time. And you have a very difficult time finding people in the industry, whether it be his peers, his colleagues, those in the media, that have a bad word to say about him. I mean, he was an utterly brilliant player. The only thing I sort of regret on his end, Buster, is the fact that super young fans don't remember the utterly dominant force that he was in St. Louis. Yeah. The way that his career ended, although it was a sort of a typical career arc traditionally, is a sad one, because the steroid guys ruined that being a thing. So Albert Pujols' career almost being rendered a footnote in Anaheim, I view as something of a baseball tragedy. But when you look at the back of the baseball card, there are not a dozen baseball players that have ever lived that have filled it up better than that guy. And I hope he stays in the game for a long, long time.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear after hearing his answers. I'm like, he'll be managing someplace within 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine an owner someplace like, wait, Albert Pujols might be our manager, and he's super smart, and he's super experienced, and he's super prepared. What are you kidding? Let's go. Let's do this.
Let's go. Absolutely. Sign me up.
Let's go on this. I tweeted out this morning, I got the Phillies beating the Yankees in the World Series. What do you think?
Okay, so I love doing this. What I don't love is that you picked my team to win the World Series, given your track record. here is what I will say.
And I will cut in right there. I'll cut in. My son, the huge Braves fan, was so relieved that I didn't pick the Braves. And he was really happy that I picked the Phillies.
Would I be surprised if the Phillies won the World Series? I would not. This team is better than either of the last two. Last year, they reached Game 7 of the NLCS. The year before, they reached Game 6 of the World Series. As I see it right now, they have the third best roster in the National League. Not all of baseball. But obviously, predicting the World Series winner with any sort of conviction is a fool's errand because baseball. Here's what worries me just a little bit. Over the last 2 years, they've been 34 wins and 398 runs, worse than the Dodgers, and 28 wins, 268 runs worse than the Braves. Now, the Phillies have advanced further than either of those teams in each of the last two postseasons. So the fandom part of my brain says this team is due and they're going to get over the hump. The more rational part of my brain says this is going to be a year where natural regression could occur in the playoffs, Buster, because I lived this. The Phillies won the World Series in 2008. They went on to have three better teams in the subsequent 3 years, right, and wound up falling short progressively in each of those three seasons, losing in the World Series to the Yankees, the NLCS to the Giants, and then the NLDS to the Cardinals. So that's the beauty and majesty of baseball. No matter how good your team is, once you get out to October, you crumple up the piece of paper. And so I can't with any conviction pick my team to win. But would it surprise me? Absolutely not.
Yeah, it's not a gambit. I said this on radio today. It's not a gambit that you want to repeat to go into the wild card round year after year after year. And I do think, and you and I both agree on this, I think if you were to do, okay, who's the best regular season team? Braves and Dodgers are 1 and 2. Phillies are probably 3. And so that would mean the Phillies have to go through that early round, which, you know what? In 3 days, you could be sitting on a couch, you know? It's not the best way to go into the postseason.
And talk me through, since you and I have not done this, this is the first time we're having this discussion. Talk me through your elevator pitch for why the Yankees or your American League representative.
First off, I don't think the league is as strong as the National League. We start with that. I don't see a team coming out of the Central. I worry about some of the regression in the Astros starting pitchers. You know, can Framber bounce back from late season struggles? Justin at 41 years old, having a shoulder issue. Javier, the Rangers are basically, as we talked about, have to play rope-a-dope for half a season while they wait for some of these older starting pitchers, by the way, to come back. One setback and either one of those guys, either DeGrom or Scherzer, could be done for the year. I think Seattle has an excellent pitching staff. I think their lineup is very, very mediocre. The Orioles, to me, and we'll get to this in a moment, they could use another starting pitcher. I think that the Yankees have a lot of great players, and I could see them scoring a ton of runs. And I am also guilty of having been around that team. They're all healthy right now. And to hear them talk about seeing Soto and seeing what they're seeing in Stanton and DJ LeMahieu, who's right physically for the first time in years, it's an older team. And that's the absolute fault in my pick for me of the Yankees going to the World Series. But I know this too, that ownership, if they are in contention, need help midseason, just like the Phillies, they're going to go get help.
I really like that exercise because what you demonstrated is that the American League is such that you can really poke holes in just about any contender. So what we're dealing with, I agree. I think what we're dealing with is a season in which so much of it will come down to variance with luck and with health, right? And with things that are unforeseeable right now. The Yankees' cleanest path to doing this is if Aaron Judge and Juan Soto combine for, say, 1,200 plate appearances and Gerrit Cole makes 30 starts. Because if they do that, if all three of those things happen, you're going to get 15, 17, 19 WAR from those three guys, and you don't need the rest of those guys to play up at all. Like if those three guys play a full season, the Yankees are in the playoffs. I trust Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman to have a dominant bullpen like they typically always do. The biggest X factor for me, Buster, in the entire freaking league is Carlos Rodon, a guy they gave $160 million to a year ago and was a destructive force on that team. If he can approximate what he was in 2020 and 2021 and 2022, when he was genuinely one of the best pitchers in baseball, the Yankees are live when it comes to winning at the highest level. If Carlos Rodon duplicates what he did last year, I mean, the Yankees could be a fringe playoff team. I think he's the biggest swing piece on the entire roster and maybe in the whole American League.
So Jeff Passan reported the other day that Lucas Giolito basically is suffering from a torn UCL. It looks like he's going to miss the season. I don't know whether or not the Red Sox have insurance on that contract. It's possible that they do. The Orioles have a payroll of just under $100 million. To me, as we sit here today, those are two teams that should absolutely find a way to do Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell. Although I will tell you, reporting something here, I'm hearing that Blake Snell's preference, strong preference, is to go to the Angels. They've been back and forth with that team. That's where I think he's going to land. But, I mean, Red Sox, Orioles, am I right? I mean, let's go.
I will meet you halfway. It makes absolutely no sense why the Boston Red Sox would not be all in on either or both of these pitchers. The Red Sox can obviously afford either of them if they want to. The Red Sox obviously have a massive hole in their rotation, especially now. They don't have a single left-handed starter that you trust whatsoever, and it was a thin group to begin with. What I'm not sure about, Buster, is who's making those decisions in Boston and whether or not the people making those decisions in Boston, like whether or not this is below their pay grade. Like I just don't understand. I can't square the circle there. I've said for the last 2 months that they should sign Jordan Montgomery. And it's not just my opinion that they should be more active. Rafael Devers, their $300 million third baseman, came out and said, none of us think that we've done a good enough job in backfilling this roster. That's not just what I think. That's what they think. So the Red Sox, to me, are a team that has mismanaged this offseason badly. The Orioles are sort of in a different bucket because the Orioles are so good and so young already. I don't exactly know where they are financially and how interested they are in spending, which is to say, if you didn't view Jordan Montgomery and or Blake Snell as wise investments before the Bradish injury, I don't think that the Bradish injury should change the calculus there. They're much less desperate. The Red Sox are desperate, or at least they should be desperate. And if I were running that team, I would have signed Jordan Montgomery 2 months ago. As far as Blake Snell is concerned, I think the Angels are the likeliest scenario based on what I'm hearing too, although I still think the Yankees should at least be given the chance to turn down that final offer. But I think, I think you're right. Financially, it's just untenable for them, even though I just have a hard time saying those words.
So here's why it doesn't work for the Yankees, okay? Short-term deal. Let's say Blake Snell goes down the potentially is willing to consider the Cody Bellinger, Matt Chapman route where you take a short-term deal at, you know, high average annual value. Here's why it wouldn't work for the Yankees. You know, in order to do that, you'd want to control the player for the sort of salary that he's going to get and for the cost. You'd give up a draft pick, right? You'd have to do draft pick compensation while paying 110% tax. So 1 year of Blake Snell plus giving up the draft picks, that's why I don't think it's going to happen for the Mets or the Yankees.
You just made me think of something. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I've been talking to friends of mine, Yankees fans, and they've been asking me, what's going on with Trevor Bauer? Is Trevor Bauer in play at all? I'm ambushing you with this question, but do you know anything and what are you allowed to share?
First off, no one is going to say, even off the record, you know, when you ask the question, what do you think? Everyone runs from the question. Let's face it. Okay? I think there's no chance that anybody signs him. Roberto Osuna, I think you would agree with me, is probably, at the time he left Major League Baseball, was among the 10 best relievers in baseball. People were shocked when the Astros traded for him, given the nature of the details behind his domestic violence suspension. And he when he was done his time with the Astros, he had that big, you know, there's a big fight, or not fight, but the confrontation in the Astros clubhouse with the assistant general manager who subsequently got fired. After that, Roberto Osuna became toxic. He can't find a job in baseball. Maybe that's the key word. You know, I don't know, but I'm just guessing here. But given the nature of what Trevor's gone through, I don't think he's going to play again in Major League Baseball. But it's just a guess.
Fair enough.
And again, that's one of those ones you ask that question and people run in the other direction because they don't want to anyone to betray any possibility that there's some kind of collusion going on. Give me your statistical projection for Juan Soto, because pretty much whatever you say, I'm going to take the over.
Okay, Buster, here's what I've done. I have made conservative yet aggressive projections that you will take the over on. I have him scoring a career-high 115 runs, hitting in front of Aaron Judge.
I'm taking the over on that. By the way, he's locked into the two spot. Aaron Boone has talked to him. He's going to go there, it looks like, with Judge hitting three. Go ahead.
So you're taking the over 115 runs. I'm setting the over under at 40 home runs. What do you say?
That one's a little tougher, as you know, because he's not built necessarily for Yankee Stadium. I think he hits 35 by accident, 40. 40's right there for me.
I have to follow up on that because he's not built for Yankee Stadium is presupposing that Juan Soto is either incapable of or too stubborn to change his approach. Will he tap more into his pull side power? Because the Juan Soto that I have seen this spring looked a little bit more hitterish than the Juan Soto I've seen
You're
in
right.
spring's past.
You're right. I would say this, if you know me being having such vast experience as a hitter, I should have asked Albert this, right? When we had him on. My what I would go right away to is, who are the best hitters in the history of the Boston Red Sox, with Fenway Park, with the Green Monster, the left-handed hitters? Because you know what? In reinforced good habits of taking the ball the other way, they were rewarded for it. If I were to tell Juan Soto, I'd say, don't try, because how many right-handed hitters have been messed up in Fenway trying to jack the ball over the wall?
That's a point well made. I've got him with 120 walks, a 425 on base, and a 550 slug.
Do those sound? If Judge stays healthy, I don't see 120 walks. I don't see 120 walks if Judge stays healthy. That's the key for me on that set of numbers.
You and I see the notion of lineup protection a little bit differently. But yeah, if there's anybody in baseball that can give Juan Soto a more attractive pitch profile, it is Aaron Judge. And I am fascinated to see how he might adjust to it.
Nice. That's that he's, I can tell you this, you know, some of the, you hear from some of the Yankee players that when Soto first joined the team this spring, like, players were stopping, veterans were going into the batting cage to watch him go through his drills. They are so jacked to watch him play. It's going to be fun. All right, Hembo, thanks for doing this.
Later, friends.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious, beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 Team Preview, San Francisco Giants.
The Giants' busy offseason began with the firing of Gabe Kapler and the hiring of Bob Melvin, who had worked with the San Francisco head of baseball operations, Farhan Zaidi, with the Oakland Athletics. The Giants offloaded the contracts of Anthony DeSclafani and Mitch Haniger and gambled on Robbie Ray, who could be back sometime this season as he recovers from Tommy John surgery. The big roster additions were among the position players. The Giants signed Jung-Hoo Lee, a center fielder who starred in the KBO, and third baseman Matt Chapman.
A guy to watch.
Kyle Harrison has the look of a future star, although the left-hander had mixed results in the minors and in his first taste in the majors in 2023. In seven starts for the Giants, he posted a 4.15 ERA, surrendering eight homers, and in AAA, he walked 48 and 65 and two-thirds innings. But assuming his command improves as he gains experience, Harrison's stuff looks like it'll play well in the big leagues, and he could be a part of a rotation that needs to lead San Francisco back into competitive relevance.
The weakest link.
For more than a decade, the Giants' shortstop was the steady, reliable Brandon Crawford.
But the Giants have jettisoned Crawford and are hopeful that eventually the dynamic Marco Luciano will man the position. But the perception among evaluators is that he needs a lot of improvement defensively, which might explain why the Giants signed veteran Nick Ahmed early in camp. This is a spot that might be in a state of flux throughout 2023.
Win projection.
Pakoda sees a lot of mediocrity in the Giants, pegging them at 81.2 wins. Sarah Lang says 82, which is where I landed. Hembo is more bullish on the Giants than others, predicting 85 wins.
Susan Slesser covers the Giants for the San Francisco Chronicle after years and years and years and years of covering the Oakland Athletics. Susan, how you doing?
I am so good, Buster. It's so good to talk to you. It's been a while.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me, what is it like, before we get started talking about the Giants this year, what's it like switching from the A's beat to the Giants beat?
Well, it's been a while. And then this year, I'm actually doing a little bit of A stuff because we don't have a full-time A's writer now. We've hired a sort of a second Giants writer. So I'm poking my head back out there, which kind of reminds me, again, the difference. And they just seem to get more extreme. This is an offseason where the Giants have spent more than $250 million in commitments over the next few years. And the, you know, the A's are the A's and seem like they're cutting costs even more and have at least one foot out the door. So it's never been more of a contrast.
So I've been having, with Sarah Langs and with Paul and Bikides, having sort of a running conversation about the Giants. Hembo is very bullish on them. He thinks they're underrated. I kind of look at him and I give a shrug like this. How good do you think they are?
What really is going to matter is the division, and they could spend all the money in the world and still potentially finish fourth in that division. You know, they've made some really nice additions. I think Jung-Hoo Lee could be the steal of the offseason, potentially. You know, the way things have looked so far and big personality, I think he's a really nice ad for them. Matt Chapman, obviously, reunited with Bob Melvin. Nice get. Jorge Soler gives them much needed power, some very nice moves, but their pitching is a little lacking until maybe the second half. And even that's an unknown. They still could go out and do some more things. I think they might need to, but they could go out and add a Blake Snell or a Jordan Montgomery and still finish fourth. I mean, that's just how good the Dodgers are. The Padres have all that talent. And then we know what Arizona did last year. So do they go out and spend more? I don't know, but I don't know why you go out and get a Matt Chapman if you don't want to have an elite pitching staff to benefit from him. So I think they could still be on the lookout for more.
As you know, when you're talking about Lee and his transition from KBO to playing in Major League Baseball, you and I both remember Ichiro's first spring when he looked awful. And all the scouts, the talk among the scouts was like, oh my God, it's overmatched. You knocked the bat out of the guy's hand and all he did was go out and throw out 3,000 hits. Tell me about Lee, what you've seen so far early in camp.
Well, it's funny because Ichiro is his all-time favorite player. He's got a slightly similar batting style, also left-handed, known for really good contact skills, great bat-to-ball skills, which we've seen so far. Maybe even a little bit more power, I think, than advertised. It's almost impossible to say, right? Like, the league will adjust to him if he gets off to a good start, or he'll struggle and he'll have to adjust. But it does look like those contact skills, much like Ichiro, might translate better than some of the other Korean players that have come over who are maybe more slugger types. But I do have to say, you know, you just never know. It reminded me when he had his press conference a little bit of when the A's introduced Hiro Nakajima, and he had this very like big personality and it was a big deal. And it seemed, oh, great fit at shortstop. He never played a day in the major leagues. He just couldn't hit or even field at that level. So it's so hard to project sometimes. And that was a guy coming from Japan. This is a guy coming from Korea, which to date has been a little less projectable.
So how would you describe right now what the Giants' big picture plan is? Because it's, you know, from the outside looking in, it's been hard to describe. You know, sometimes I go on radio in San Francisco and they'll ask me about that and I'll go, well, I don't know whether, you know, there. It feels like that they've been trying to develop the farm system coming off the, you know, the Sabian and Evans and Bruce Bochy years while theoretically competing.
Yeah, that, I mean, I think that's fair to say. And that they do have a really nice stockpile of good young pitchers, most of whom are not on the 40-man roster. They do have some injuries at the back of the rotation, so we might be seeing some of those young guys sooner than expected. They've developed a heck of a catcher in Patrick Bailey. They really have spiffed things up when it comes to the system. Every year they've said, you know, we're going all in on the biggest name free agents. And that has been the narrative as they keep missing out on these guys. What I think gets lost is they're doing a really good job of getting the guys just below that. You know, there's only one Aaron Judge. There's only one Bryce Harper. There's only obviously only one Shohei Ohtani. And it's tough to compete with some of the big dogs like the Yankees and Dodgers when it comes to players like that. The Giants have been right in on basically everyone else, and they're really starting to get more and more of those. So I think that narrative is a little tired, and certainly this offseason, they've really been spending a ton, a lot of commitments. They've had to do some creative things like the Chapman contract, obviously, and trade for Robbie Ray to get a guy with a, you know, sort of Cy Young credentials in. But it's a little bit that, like the whole Moneyball thing, get creative, find some guys on the margins, draft and develop, but also with a much bigger budget, which of course is what Andrew Friedman is doing to the extreme in LA, which makes it very tough in that same division.
Speaking of Moneyball, you covered Bob Melvin as a manager for a lot of years. What's different, Gabe Kapler versus Bob Melvin, and how it translates with the players? And tell me if you feel like Bob will do as many matchups as Gabe did. Because that, you know, we would prepare, go in there for Sunday Night Baseball, and in our preparation almost seemed futile. Like, you just didn't know what you were going to get, you know, and he might project a starting pitcher, and then they would turn out to be an opener for one inning, and they would go to somebody else. How is he different, Bob Melvin, than Gabe?
Well, I think some of those differences are also sort of now coming from the front office. I think that they have said repeatedly they'd like to have a more of a set everyday lineup. Everybody would like that, but they've made some moves that will allow for that. So a little bit fewer platoons, I think, although certainly Bob Melvin ran an awful lot of platoons when he was in Oakland. That was very common. He's very comfortable with that if that's what they wind up needing to do. But they've been front office, Brian Price, Bob Melvin have all been clear. They kind of want to move away from using openers quite so much. They'd like to have their starters pitch deeper into games. The young guys have not been coming up with lots of innings under their belt. They've been coming in like, you know, they're going like four innings and coming out, maybe five quick innings. So I think that kind of thing is going to shift a little bit. I certainly hope in the minors, because Kyle Harrison came up last year and he really just wasn't stretched out enough. He did very well in the games. He was able to go a little bit longer in, but I think that's going to be a little bit more of an emphasis, but you can't get more of a difference, I don't think, than going from, I went from Melvin forever to Kapler and now back to Melvin. And it's a little bit of whiplash, you know, like sort of the all-time embodiment of a guy who really is just a great communicator with everybody in Bob Melvin, gets along with everyone, really very high emotional IQ. And I'm not saying Kapler's not like that. He's just such a different kind of outside the box guy. He's a very different cat, not your normal baseball kind of guy. I actually really enjoyed that. I found him fascinating to cover. He thought about things very differently from, you know, I covered like Johnny Oates and Art Howe and guys like that, you know, really old school guys going back. And he was just so different. But I think Bob Melvin is such a good communicator. And that was the one consistent thing we heard from players last year, was that the communication sometimes was a little lacking. Never a problem with Bob Melvin.
So I really feel like Logan Webb is one of the most underrated players in baseball. He's the Giants' best player. Give me a story or two about him that you like to tell people.
Well, he's just absolutely so completely dogged and determined. If things aren't working his way, he will completely change things around. You know, when he first came up, the changeup was what everybody noticed. And then guys started, you know, and he was throwing it way too much. The league adjusted, kind of, you know, put his job in jeopardy at different points. And he just absolutely changed everything up, developed other pitches. Now he can go back to that changeup. But he is such, he's a team leader. He will say what needs to be said. He's very funny. He has lots of running jokes with everyone. And he's that rare starting pitcher who is a leader for the whole clubhouse and not just sort of pitching staff.
That doesn't happen very often, as you know.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. And he grew up an A's fan and was a big fan of all those early sort of Bob Melvin teams, the Josh Donaldson type teams, the Cespedes teams. So he's thrilled Bob Melvin is here. And I think that's going to be a really fun working relationship. But, you know, he does go a little under the radar, but he finished second in the Cy Young race. So, hey, maybe the Giants could figure out a way to have the guy that beat him also in the rotation.
You know, it's interesting. He reminds me a lot, and you know this person far better than I do, but just in terms of his demeanor and the way he's on the mound, of Tim Hudson.
Yeah, totally, you know? Different body types. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Go-getters, determined, and off the field, as nice as you can get, and funny and big personality. On the field, you do not want to mess with them. Like, they are guys who are just going to get after it. So I love that comp. Completely different in terms of pitchers and size and everything. But yeah, I could see that too. And honestly, Logan would love that comparison.
All right, Susan. Well, thanks for doing this.
Fantastic, Buster. Anytime.
Bleacher Tweets are brought to you by DirecTV. Get the best of live sports and streaming together. No satellite dish required. Now stream DirecTV satellite free.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, everyone. We got some new Bleacher Tweets for you today. This one we're kicking off with Matthew.
Hi, Buster. This is Matthew Porto, a Dodger fan located up in Boston, Massachusetts. Longtime listener to the show. Absolutely love it. Absolutely love the work you guys do. My question is regarding the 2020 World Series win. I'm really tired of hearing this constant sort of caveat placed on that World Series, the Mickey Mouse World Series, or, oh, it was in a 60-game season. Do you think there will ever come a time when that sort of fades away and the World Series is viewed for the achievement that it was, which is, you know, a win with a level playing field and a true World Series? Thanks so much, and keep up the great work.
Well, I appreciate that, Matthew. Some kind words there. And also, I grew up a Dodger fan, and the first World Series that the Dodgers won during my fandom was actually in 1981, and it was during the strike season. They played about two-thirds of the games in the regular season, and the Dodgers, they had to sort of make up a playoff format for that year. They had a first-half, second-half format. And I would say over time, that has faded. Like, there's that, you don't hear the qualifiers when they talk about the Dodgers 1981 World Series, maybe because COVID was such an international event that anytime anybody references the 2020 season and World Series, they're going to reference COVID and the fact that it was shortened. But I do think over time that's going to fade.
And here's the next one. We got one from David.
Hey, Buster. My name's David from West Virginia. I'm actually really good friends with one of your more famous Bleacher tweeters, Corey Rukert. I've been listening to the podcast for years and years. I don't have Twitter, so it's really awesome that you guys are opening up to the phone lines for these questions. But we appreciate that. I'm a Red Sox fan, so I would love for you to ease my weary mind and tell me that John Henry is going to open up his checkbook and give Scott Boras and Jordan Montgomery whatever they want to get him in a Red Sox uniform. I feel like if they miss out on him, they're poised for yet another fifth place finish in the division. If that plays out, do you think that it's time to hear calls for an ownership change in Boston? Thanks, Buster.
So, David, you might as well have been writing our rundown because I talked to Hembo about that and hit that topic. I don't think there's an excuse, especially, and I don't know the answer to this, if the Red Sox have insurance on Giolito's contract. I think Montgomery makes a lot of sense. Now, I will tell you that there's a perception among some of the Yankees who know Montgomery that his preference is that he might want to play in a market like Texas rather than a market like Boston. I don't know if that's true. You know, we heard about, Jordan's wife is in Boston. Maybe he does want to pitch for the Red Sox. But I agree with you. I actually thought last year about writing an article that was like an open letter to to John Henry saying, man, your ownership has been amazing. I think John Henry someday should make a speech in Cooperstown. You know, the fortunes of the franchise changed after he bought the team. But my question to him would be, do you care as much about winning as you did when you first bought the team? And it'd be interesting to hear what his answer would be.
And here's our next one from Tom.
Hey, Buster. My name's Tom. I'm a big San Diego Padres fan. I'm a really big fan of the show. And my question for you is about the Padres and a few other teams that are about 20 or so million dollars under the cap. They're not spending. For some reason, the Padres have tons of holes. They're not spending their money, and they're not the only team. And so my question is, why are they doing this? And why are there still so many players, good quality players, left out there? Thanks.
So it's a complicated answer. One, for some franchises, like the Texas Rangers, like the Seattle Mariners, they're kind of hiding behind the television situation, the RSN, uncertainty about their revenue. I think with the Padres, a lot of that has to do with the passing of Peter Seidler. I had conversations with Peter about their spending, and his feeling was, we'll be fine. Like, it felt like that he didn't mind running a franchise that operated in the red to some degree because he wanted to give a winning team to San Diego. I don't know if the perspective is the same within the organization among the minority owners. So it'll be interesting to see what direction the Padres take as they move forward. Will they grow the payroll again, or will they go back to being a small market team? I remember writing a column at the time Manny Machado signed saying, look, the only way this works, afford a player like Manny Machado, is if you have an owner who's willing to spend big. Peter Seidler was willing to do that. I don't know if the owners that have followed him feel the same way.
And that wraps up our Bleacher Tweets for today. Please leave us a message by calling 406-404-8460, and we'll try to get it over to Buster, or you can tweet us and still ask him one of your questions.
That's it for today. My thanks to Albert Pujols, to Hembo, to Susan Slusser, to Sean, to Adrian. Stay safe, and remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.